Yeah. Right. Now, you were born in Ramsey, weren't you?
Yes.
And went to school in Ramsey?
Yes.
What age were you when you left school?
I was about 13 years of age.
13. And did you go straight to school? Straight to sea from school?
I was off with a ill health
uh-huh.
when I was going to school. Attendant Dr. Deaton departed and gone now.
Yeah.
And Dr. Deaton said to my parents, when my father asked to see, could he take me for a trip to sea, he said, I can't see what will make any difference. He's only got 6 weeks to live.
Really?
Right. Gosh. So finally, to finish, he put two and two together, my father and my mother, and he said, well, take him. And that was that.
Yeah.
Now that was the start off of me first going to sea.
Good
talk. And then in Exolute I got the job as ordinary seaman.
Yeah. What boat were you on when you first went with your father?
I went with my father in the Ben Sea.
Oh, that was the one that was lost on...
Yes, that was the one that was lost, yes. Langness.
Yes. And he'd been with the steamship company since the start? Was this with the Ramsey Steamship Company?
My father was not with the Ramsey Steamship right from the start. He'd automatically... sailed in the schooners and that, and he was with the salt works when the salt works was running the salt.
I see.
In the sailing ships, you see.
Yes, yeah.
The Lively and the New Leader.
Oh,
you
yes,
see.
Yeah.
And of course, he in an Exolute was, he had a bit of a row with Sandy Todd over there, and of course he went over and he got a job in the steamship.
Yes, yeah.
He went as a mate in the steam. Ship company, you see, and he was mate in the Ben Blanche with the man and he was Captain Cowley from Port St. Mary. Captain Cowley's son, latterly, was a harbour master at Peel, Captain Bruce Cowley.
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah.
Latterly, he also was skipper in the Ben Blanche after Captain Cowley, his father, retired, like kind of style, you see.
Yeah.
So then the next salute boss, then he got promoted, then he went to the skipper of the Ben Veg. This was the one that the Ramsey Steamship Company had built for them at Larne in Northern Ireland, carrying about 140 tons, he was, you know.
Ah.
And he done a spell in the Ben Veg, and finally he went down to the Ben Seer. He was skipper in the Ben Seer.
And that was the first boat that you were on when you were a young fella?
That was the first boat that I went to sea on, was the Ben Seer.
Conditions would be a bit rough in those days.
You must be joking.
Yeah.
To start off, we slept as a person would sleep in a coffin.
Aye.
Hard boards. And we had what they called a palliasse, a straw palliasse for a mattress.
Yeah.
The sailors used to call them donkey's breakfasts. And he went very far wrong, either, you know. And you bought this palliasse in the ship chandlers for 1 and 6 pence.
Yeah.
They were rolled up like that, and you just automatically took them and rolled them up. Now, they were all right as long as the straw was pretty good, but once with the constant lying on them, when the straw got down, now your ribs was pretty sore.
I'll see.
It's been, there was no springs underneath you, you see. So, as the time went by, of course, things started to... They were a long, long time, though, before they started to get better, I mean, see, because wages was only very, very small, you see.
What wage did you get when you first went?
My wages was 30 shillings per week.
Yeah.
£1.09 I used to lift, and 10 pence was kept off for me insurance then.
Mm-hmm.
Now, out of that, you had to keep yourself, feed yourself, clothe yourself, and also... send a bit home to your mother or to the family to help to keep the wheel turning.
Yes.
But mind you, things in those days, there wasn't a lot of money knocking round about, but the cost of living in another thing was a lot different, because a loaf of bread was only 4 pence.
Yes. Yeah.
And I can remember bringing eggs home from the west of Ireland when we'd be trading out round the west of Ireland. We may bring a cargo of coal or something out round the west of Ireland to one of the Irish ports. It could have been anywhere. It doesn't matter what county it was in. You You went round there. No matter whether it was winter or summer, you went out.
Yes.
And like the lap of the gods, more or less, you had to come back 9 times out of 10 light ship because there was nothing to bring back. Maybe an odd cargo of kelp.
Mm.
You might pick it up off one of the islands and bring this kelp. It was only burnt seaweed, more or less, brought into up to the Clyde, up to Bowland in the Clyde, or up to Western Point in the Manchester Ship Canal. And of course, it was brought into these big factories for to get all sorts of stuff out of the iodine. Iodine was made out of it, like kind of style, but they got all sorts of stuff out.
Did they do much trading around the Irish coast?
Oh, terrible trading.
Did they?
Oh, it was. Did that terrible trading. Yeah. Right round about when you start off from when you leave Northern Ireland altogether there at Loch Foyle and you're way up to Londonderry, and then you steam the way up to Inverashiel, which is up well right up to the most northerly point of Ireland, in Northern Ireland. Of course, that automatically now you're into Donegal, which is the Irish Free State.
Ah, yes.
You see, and Inverashiel Lighthouse is sitting out on an island out just a little bit to the north of Malin Head.
Yeah.
And Malin Head is the most northerly point in Ireland.
Yeah.
Well, after you passed Inverashiel then, you steered away over for about 35 mile over for an island called Tory.
Mm-hmm.
Tory Island. There was people up to 350 inhabitants living on Tory.
Yeah.
And there was two lighthouses on it, one on the north side and one on the south side, you see. And then you steamed away along then to Arranmore Lighthouse.
Yeah.
That was another lighthouse. The next lighthouse then you came to was a place called Rathlin o' Burn.
Mm.
That was on the north side of Donegal Bay, and on the south side of Donegal Bay, which is 58 mile wide, the bay is.
Yes.
You've got Eagle Island. From Eagle Island then you continue over to the west until you come to a lighthouse called Black Rock, which is about, I suppose, 8 or 9 miles off the mainland. A pinnacle rock, looking about 295 feet out of the water. And that rock has got 3 cranes on it to lift the stores and coal up to the lighthouse out of a boat, up to the first landing, up to the second landing, and up to the third landing. And then after you got the coal all bagged, you had to carry it then 118 steps up to the lighthouse.
Good heavens.
295 feet out of the water, and the principal keeper would tell you in the winter time that the spray goes right over the top of the rock.
Really?
295 foot high. The bottom crane gets washed away every winter with the big surge of the sea coming in. And I said to him one day, talking to him, and quite interested kind of stuff, because when you said the wild and woolly west, wild, the stays out there, if you in the winter time, if you would have opened your mouth, you wouldn't have got it shut with the force of the wind.
Yes, yeah. Now, the conditions on the boats, would be open bridges?
Oh, open bridge, yes. Yeah. Oh, you had everything. You had your oilskin, your sea boots.
Yeah.
You had a sou'wester. You had a muffler, you had a balaclava, you had maybe a pair of gloves on you, and then over the gloves you might have a pair of all knitted stockings.
Aye.
Over that for to keep you warm. Because you see, you couldn't dance your feet like that because there might be somebody asleep down below you see.
Aye.
Keep your feet down, and you weren't allowed to walk about because you were standing steering the boat, the compass was about 3 foot or 4 foot in front of you, and you're steering the boat, you've automatically... You know?
Yes, you couldn't move.
Because there'd be two on the watch, you see. The mate would have a sailor on the watch, and then the AB, he would have the skipper wouldn't keep a watch, but the skipper was the navigator, you see, and he could come up at any time, or call me if you want me kind of style, you see.
Yes, yeah.
But it was drastic.
It would be.
Oh, it was drastic.
It'd be a hard life.
Hard life. I've seen that black rock that I'm telling you about, that lighthouse, putting the coal out on it. And we used to every year have to go out to do that, you see.
Yes.
by people the name of Waldies in Glasgow. They were the government contractors.
Uh-huh.
And they automatically then kind of subcontracted it to the Ramsay Steamship Company and got the boat on hire, you see, for
yeah.
to come and pick up. Now you could go down to Whitehaven, Garston, Birkenhead, Ayr, you name it. Wherever the coal had to be picked up, you would pick it up. And then there was, besides the cargo coal you had, you'd have all sorts of things. You'd have fishing rods, bamboo poles for fishing on the rocks, you see.
Yeah.
Oh, God, you name
and,
it.
And was there any sort of harbour near the lighthouse, or did you just have to
go
right
No, in? You were, you, the water was that deep, you see, you couldn't anchor.
No.
If you could get anchors at some place, fair enough, but but at Black Rock and Eagle Island, you just had to lie dodging.
Did you?
You see, and, uh-huh. and when the boat went in with the coal for the to be lifted up, kind of started, you automatically, or the skipper would be up on the bridge, he'd be doing that because you were busy on the deck, you'd be filling the coal, weighing it.
Really?
Oh, aye. And getting it ready for, if you couldn't get fellas to go into the hatch, you had to do the lot.
Good heavens.
Oh. You had to get the lights done because, you see, if you didn't get the rocks done, the land bases weren't so bad.
No,
but if you couldn't get the rocks done, the rocks, you might be waiting a month.
Yes.
You
yes.
see?
Yeah.
I seen
me
one Sunday there at this here Black Rock, as you call it. We went out on the Sunday morning, 6 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
Yes, to go out to Black Rock now for to coal the lighthouse. We were putting 10 ton of coal on it. The coal was bagged, filled and bagged, weighed, put into the boat, delivered up to the lighthouse, into the lighthouse keeper's coal house. And it was midnight at night when we finished.
Good Lord.
That was 18 hours for the coal to put that 10 ton of coal on. Because it was hand heaving the coal up with the cranes till you got them to the first landing.
Yeah.
And then you had to go to heave them up to the second landing on the second. And then the third one, and then after that, carried them up 118 steps into the lighthouse.
And did the seamen have to do that as
well? Oh, yes, we had to do that. That was all. If you were working, the way that they had it was, that's what I tell you before, things was very hard.
Yes.
You see?
Yeah.
What you got was, and you thought, you wouldn't have called the Queen your aunt, because you got a penny halfpenny an hour. When you were doing the land basis.
Yeah.
But if you were doing the rocks, you got sixpence. If you were doing the rocks, because the work had to start on the rocks, you see.
Oh, I see.
Oh,
yeah.
Definitely so.
Yeah.
The work had to start on the rocks. And then you carried right on until you got them all into a place called Inishgard in Clew Bay. And you do Clare Island Lighthouse. We would finish up at on the Aran Islands at a place called Kilronan. They used to have a kind of a small mail boat service running across from Kilronan across to Galway, an Irish shipping firm. She was only a very, very small thing kind of style, you know.
Yeah.
But she would be taking cattlemen, bringing stuff over to them kind of style, you know, to the...
Yes.
Because Kilronan had a good enough harbour. The harbour was pretty well sheltered kind of style, you know.
Yeah.
That was the place where those fellas that rode across the Western Ocean landed.
Oh,
they
yes.
landed in Aran Islands,
that's
you see.
Right. Yes.
The,
yeah.
the drift, the Wesley drift had brought them right over to the Aran Islands, and that's where they were taken ashore in a place called Kilronan.
Yeah.
Then when you got the coal all out kind of style, you had to do Inishia on one end of the Aran Islands, Inishmain on the other end, and there was an island just outside of, a lighthouse just outside of Kilronan Pier across the bay called Straw Island.
Mm.
Now those three had to be done, you see, kind of style.
Yeah.
But the beauty of it was, on the Aran Islands, the Aran fellas used to do the boating.
Oh, I see.
And they were doing it in canvas cutters.
Were they?
And they were carrying 30 hundred weight of coal in the canvas cutters.
Were they really?
Yes. Oh, they were born oarsmen.
Were they?
Oh,
yeah.
God. Yes. That was their trade, you
yes.
see.
Yes.
And the way their cutters were built kind of style, you see, the nose of the cutter was raised up like that kind of style.
Yes.
Now, they may have to land kind of style on a sandy beach.
Yes.
So they automatically, they would be rowing in kind of style, and the wind could be in on this here beach. The first thing you would see was, when they're getting in so close, they'd swing the cutter right round about like that. Okay. Now the high part was to the sea, you see, and they backed the cutter in on the beach.
Yes.
And the minute that the cutter struck the ground, over the side, boots and all on them, out, get the cutter.
In the water.
Oh, now, the cutter was their life.
Was it?
Oh, they were. That
was their fishing boat as well, wasn't it?
That was their fishing boat. They were going out fishing in that, you see, because their staple diet in them days was their fish.
Yes.
Fish was their staple diet.
Yes.
Their fish and potatoes, you see.
I saw a programme recently on the Blasket Islands. And
oh, I've put coal on the Blaskets.
Have you really?
Oh, definitely. Oh, yes.
Ah.
Oh, yes.
Good heavens.
There's not a place, hardly an island, I haven't been in.
No.
And you start right off from the Tusca Rock.
Yes.
You go right up, we'll say, from Holyhead, and you can carry one straight course right up to the Tusca.
Yeah.
Now, the big ships, when they were going out to the Western Ocean, they would turn at the Tusca, you see,
yeah.
And they'd go way up then for what? Right up out up the old Hedican Sail.
Yeah.
I've seen a big Italian salvage boat one time called the Artiglio working on one of their... White Star boat or Canada there?
Yes.
They were down after the gold in there, you see.
Were they?
Oh,
salvage.
All laid out like a football field it was, with big coloured mollocks, you know. We park them there this year, day, you know.
Yes, yeah.
But their sea was full of fish there. I passed there from down past the old Hedican Sail, especially at night time, if the weather was fine, maybe, you know, in the likes of the summertime.
Yeah.
And mackerel. Yeah. The sea was alive with mackerel.
Was it?
All night you'd see the mackerel shooting away from the boat.
Yeah.
And that was only the place you were in, you see.
Yeah.
The ocean was full of mackerel.
Yes. Yeah.
And of course the herring, they were great on the herring too. We used to do a lot of bunkering the steam drifters, the Scottish steam drifters that all used to come from Scotland.
Mm.
And they used to go up to Loch Swilly, to a place called Buncrana. You see, and they were going out fishing the herring kind of style, you see. And then you would be in here. If they wanted bunkers, you would give them three tub fulls of coal to the ton.
I see.
You'd put so much aboard this side, then he'd swing the drift around about, because there were side pockets in the deck, you see.
Yes, yeah.
Aye, but it was...
How many was there in the crew of the boat?
There was... Well, it all depends, you see. The Ben C, she had... There was the master and the mate. There was two ABs and the ordinary seaman. Now, that was the deck crowd. Now, down below, there was the engineer, the second engineer, and the fireman.
Yeah.
Because, you see, the fireman would be on watch with the chief.
Yes.
Firing for the chief. But the second engineer would have to fire his own watch.
I see.
He would have to look after the engine and fire his own watch, you see, you know.
So it was a shuffle job with him as well.
Oh, it was all shuffle work. Oh, yes. Yeah. The fires had to be cleaned periodically. I mean to say, for the watches coming over and changing over. The ashes had to be lifted up and dumped out over the side kind of style, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, it was all... Oh. Everybody kind of style. They were... It come as automation to you.
Yes.
You kind of style, you didn't have to be taught.
No.
You knew it had to be done, so it had to be done, you see.
It was teamwork, was it?
It was, of course, you'd get an odd needle in the woolsack now again, you see, more or less, you know.
Yeah.
And then you'd be scrubbing the bottoms down the harbour, scrubbing the bottoms and painting the bottoms and tarring the bottoms and putting the numbers on the bows and the numbers on the sterns. God bless us.
Well, when you were taking a cargo of grain or a cargo of vegetable potatoes or turnips after a coal cargo, did you have to clean the holes out?
Oh, definitely. Oh, aye, but you're only talking about the easy parts.
Yeah.
What about the parts of going to load a cargo of white salt after having a cargo of Welsh steam coal in?
White salt?
White salt. Edible salt.
Aye.
Oh, yeah. Or a cargo of flour. All in linen bags.
Good Lord.
Too true.
And you had to clean the hole out?
It had to be meticulous. If it wasn't fit, they didn't put it in.
Really?
Oh, aye. And you'd be surprised, some of the cargoes that you'd have sometimes, you know.
Yes.
You'd find out you'd be loading a load of tar barrels to bringing them over to the Isle of Man, because I can go back to as far as the days when there was no tankers. They were bringing the petrol and the paraffin over to the Isle of Man in drums.
Really?
Oh, definitely. The Ramsay Steamship, not the Ramsay Steamship, excuse me, the J.B. Key Limited.
Yes.
You see?
Yes.
They first started off, John Key first started off himself with an old thing called the lid.
Yes.
She was an old ex-drifter, wooden drifter.
Really?
You see, to run cargo over. And they were running barrels of petrol and barrels of stuff. And then the next salute, they got one and they called her the Lord Milner.
Uh-huh.
Yes. I can still see them yet, sitting upside the swing bridge outside of Dibbs' shop in Ramsey, the two of them.
The Lord Milner.
The Lord Milner was another one. And then that's what the fella said, they advanced just as a baby would learn to walk. They advanced a bit then, they got the little puffer type of coaster, you see.
Yeah.
They were wood, the Lord Milner they were wooden ships, you see. Yeah.
The lid. Yeah.
Steam engines.
Yeah.
And steam engines, but they were wooden boats.
Wooden hulls
on them, you see. And then the next salute, they got, they bought her boat from the Channel Islands. She was called the Fawn. Now, she had been a fish runner in her day, and of course, she was built for speed.
Yeah.
She had a big triple engine in her and a very big high-powered boiler, you see.
Yeah.
But they were built with yachts, with lines on them, as we'll call it, as like a yacht, for speed, you see. They had to go to catch the trains,
yes.
You see.
Yeah.
So she was bought, and she ran for years and years on the petrol trade, you see. They had another little thing there that they bought from somewhere up around about the Glasgow area, and they called her the Staffer. They must have only been carrying roughly about 80 tonne.
Really?
That's
yeah,
all,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Oh, 80 tonne now. Yeah. But it's what the fellow said, they advanced. Now, the first thing then that happened was, oh, look out, the Banshee was bought.
Yeah.
Built up at Ellesmere Port, she was. They built three or four of them alongside one another up there. The Beconia, she was another one. The Doris Thomas, she was another one. The Banshee was one. But when the Ramsay Steamship Company bought the Banshee, she cost $26,500. And money, my God,
yeah.
Never heard of the like.
Ah, yeah.
£26,500 for this boat.
Yes.
You see.
Yeah.
But anyhow, she was bought anyhow. Fair enough, right. She started trading. And that was the first boat that I went to see in.
Yes.
I had to do it in them all kind of style, but that was my first.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, when I got promoted, supposed to be now, from the Ben Fear, who had a wheelhouse and a top bridge, to the Ben Veg, who had nothing at all.
Really?
My God.
Just open bridge?
Open bridge.
Really?
That's all.
And what tonnage could the Ben Veg carry?
Oh, she carried about 140 tonne.
140 tonne.
And she'd only carry about 10 tonne of bunkers, so therefore, if you're going on a long passage out on the west of Ireland,
yeah.
What they used to do was, you'd take so much cargo and you'd leave a space in the after end of the hatch.
Yeah.
Now you'd have to go and level that space all out and put a big lump of a canvas cover in.
Yeah.
And then they would tip a wagon of coal on that, 10 tonne of coal. Now when you got to your destination, you had to get that coal out before you started to discharge.
Oh, I see.
You see, you had to get that out because that was going to take you back home again,
yeah.
You see.
Because
you weren't... He wasn't carrying enough fuel for to do the journey, you see.
No.
But the likes of the Banshee, they would carry anything up to maybe about 30 tonne or so.
Yeah.
It wasn't too bad, the likes of that, you
no.
see.
And what sort of a seaboat was the Benveg? Was she a good seaboat?
Oh, yes, good seaboat.
Yes.
But they're very, very wet.
Very
they
wet.
They're only a glorified plank, you know what I mean to say?
Yeah.
That's all they were.
Yeah.
My God, there's many a plank floating around about in the ocean that was the size of those things.
Yes.
They were, I mean to say, the sea just rolled in over the top of them and rolled out over the other side.
Aye.
So many a time they'd come up out of the water, you just thought they were like a submarine coming up out, you know.
And what about your cooking and all that?
We didn't do no cooking. The cooking was forgotten all about. If it was going to take you 20, 30, 40, 60 hours to get to your destination, you got no grub. Because there was no cooking facilities there for you to have. If you were able to automatically had the bogey in the forecastle going,
yeah,
a little bit of a bogey with a chimney going up through,
yeah,
and you could boil a can of tea on it.
Yeah.
And if you could automatically scratch the ashes in the bottom of the grate to make a piece of toast, that's what's going to keep you till you got going.
Was it?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
But, you wouldn't be able to put on tape the half of what was happening.
No.
You couldn't describe it. It would be impossible nearly to describe it, you know what I mean to say?
Yeah.
Yes.
People wouldn't do it today under those conditions.
They wouldn't do it.
No.
God forbid they wouldn't do it today.
No.
Oh, no.
No.
Oh, well, I'll tell you, when I was paid off in the Ben Sea when they cut the crew down, I thought it was the end of the world. I'd lost my job, you see. Through no fault of my own, only they were cutting the crew down, you see.
Yeah.
And, of course, Arnott Metal, he had to go too, you see. Right, oh, fair enough. So I happened to be automatically in the house out at Fergusley, out the Derby Road there, living me father that. And the milkman used to call in the morning with the milk, a fellow Jimmy Callow. And he was farming on Ballymore out at the Derby. So anyhow, he spotted me, you see, a couple of times. He said to me, hey, John, you're not working. No, I said, I was paid off the other day there. I said, they're cutting the crews down. So he said, would you like a job? What's on? He says, we're going to start thrashing out, he said, at Ballymore. He said, would you like to come and give us a hand? I says, fair enough. All right, I'll be out at 8 o'clock in the morning. Now, I'm living at Fergusley, and I've got to be out at Ballymore for 8 o'clock in the morning.
Good luck.
And sure enough, I got the bus out. In the one of the old-time buses pulled a string on the roof. I can remember it. There was about a dozen of us in this car going out to do the thrashing. You see, in the first, when we got out, it was blowing very hard, and I thought to myself, I don't think there'll be any thrashing done today. They'll not take the canvases off the stack, you see.
Yes, yeah.
You see, so anyhow, going round about to look for them, and then we found them up in the cowhouses here doing the milking. So I said to Jimmy Keller, well, James, I said, what's going to happen today? Are you going to thrashing? Oh, no, we won't be able to take the covers off the stack, he said. But hang on, he said, till we get the milking done. And then he says, we're going to go up there to open up some ridges of spuds. And he says, you can do that to put the time in instead of going back. We thought we'd have to go back home.
Yeah.
My God, you couldn't straighten your back at night time. It was about 7:30 at night, and the moon was up in the sky, and we're still picking spuds.
Get away.
To try. Oh, he said, they finished. Just cover a bit of soil over them so the frost won't get them, and call that a day. You just pick the spuds and put them in the bag. You don't know separating or not.
No.
So finally, anyhow, when they got the stacks up the covers off the stacks, and Al Quig and Balavar in there, he started to do the thrashing, you see. And of course, I was put up on top of the stacks, you see. Oh, you're a good, healthy lad, you see. Well, I was up on top of the stacks. Of course, top of the stack was a bit wet, you see, sticking the fork in.
Yeah.
You might have been lifting three sheaves of corn up, and the first thing, the handles broke. Oh, come down there, that, you're too strong. Come on, get down here in the sacks.
Oh,
that's where I landed up. So we done all that. He had about six stacks of corn. He thrashed about six stacks, and they were stacks of corn too.
Yes.
Because Ballymore, there's terrible big fields on it, you know.
Yeah.
So finally they done that, and then at the finish, he said to me, all the boys generally, the hard work kind of style, they wouldn't come on the bus. I'd only gone out myself at the last.
Yes.
On my own.
Yeah.
He said to me at the finish, he said, are you still doing nothing now? We had to put the bales up in the Dutch barn after 2 years.
Oh, yeah.
And I was getting for that there, I was getting for that, I wouldn't have called the Queen my aunt, I was getting £1 a day for that.
Really?
You see, £1 a day. I was getting for that. Man, it was a long day.
Oh, yes.
But it was a lot of money, you see.
Yes.
And I didn't care how long it went on. I was getting paid £1 per day. So anyhow, and your food too.
And food.
So anyhow, finally at the finish, what's on next, James? He said, you see the state of the hedges out here, and God forbid they were riddled with rabbit warrens, you know.
Yeah.
He said, we're thinking of ploughing, he says, about 6 or 8 furrows, he said, from the headland, he says, out, he says, for the fix the hedges up. My God, I said, we'll never get these fixed up, I said. Never in a lifetime get round the field with that there. They put the headlands right round one of them fields, but they put sods up. It wasn't very long after that, I thought myself, thank God for that, that the the Air Force come over and they put the bulldozers in and they levelled the lot.
Aye.
They made the airport,
the airport,
see?
Yes, yeah. Yes.
But we had to walk them times from... I lived out at before I'm going to have my father, I said at Fergus Lee out at Turby Road.
Yeah.
We lived out at the Beehive Cafe, it was called Turby, out in Turby East, called West View.
Yes.
At that time, up by the old smithy up in Turby East. I lived up there for a few years too, and I went to school to Turby School from there, you see.
Did you?
Aye.
Who was the schoolmaster at Turby?
The man, the name of Senior, Mr. Senior.
Was he?
He finished up at Cuaget, latterly.
Did he?
Himself and the wife, of course, and the daughter, they all lived up there. And you had to hoof it, like mine to style, you see.
Yes, yeah.
You'd be taking a bit of a jam butty sandwich with you to school.
Yeah.
And you'd be coming back from school at when your school was finished there, and you'd be coming back down past the fields at Barrack that touched the road when you were coming down through for the, to come home, when you'd be jumping over the gate and getting a turnip and knocking the top off it to eat it. You were that hungry.
Yes.
Oh, you were hungry.
Yes.
But it's what the fella said. And we had to walk automatically then from Turby East up to Sobey Glen or Sobey Bridge Station.
Yes.
Sobey Glen, we used to walk though from Turby East when we going up to get the train.
Did you?
Now you had to give yourself time enough to get from there up there. You couldn't have stand to talk to anybody. Come on, let's go.
Yeah.
You see? And your fare was 1 and 6 pence return.
To Douglas?
Hmm?
Was it?
That's what we were paying. 1 and 6 return.
Good Lord.
And of course, we carried all the coal, you see, for the Isle of Man railways, both in Ramsey, when they used to discharge it down the quay there. I don't know, you may have remembered.
Do you remember
the line going down?
Yes.
It went down right down as far outside of Lay's shop there.
That's right, yes.
Outside the Isle of Man bank. That was the last stop as there was there. They come down there, well, that quay there, they discharged the railway coal there, all the railway coal there, you see, and carted it up in the train for the take up to the station. And that was all coming from the Bristol Channel. It could have been from Newport in Mons or Cardiff or different places there. Swansea, many a time, Swansea. Or Newport down. We done a lot of running down. We carried an awful lot of oats down.
Did you? Yeah.
Oats down. Because, you see, there was pit ponies at that time down in the pits working, you see, pulling the coal along, you see. One mechanized. Mm. And, of course, you were bringing the oats down for the feeding of the pit ponies, and then you thought yourself lucky if you got a cargo of oats down and a cargo coal back, you see. Didn't have to come down late ship for to come back.
No.
Many a time you'd have to come maybe late ship from the southwest of Ireland. It could have been anywhere. It could have been up the Shannon, Kilbehar, Kildyset, you name it. All them places all out around the west of Ireland. It's interesting to know the places that you had been in. We used to go into another little place in the west of Ireland, in the south west of Ireland, called Crookhaven. There was a quarry in there, and we used to load granite chippings and bring them down to Cardiff. Granite chippings. Another deadly cargo in a boat, especially in the winter time. Cement was bad enough, but chippings, of course, the chippings was up like that, you see, you had to watch, they didn't shift, you know.
Yes.
You'd be tapped heavy, of course, many a time you'd have a bad passage over, even with a cargo of coal, and you'd find them coming in into the harbour with a bit of a list on them, they'd shifted the cargo over.
You went back to sea, what boat did you go back in?
Well, when I went back to sea then, I got promoted then to the Ben Vuer. And Captain Robert Wales.
Yes.
He used to be harbour master at Blacksea. He was the master of it, you see.
Mm.
Yes. But then there was all different sorts of crew. There's a man by the name of Fred Gawne. He was harbour master latterly at Port of Mary. He died sitting in the chair in his own kitchen.
Mm.
And he was the mate. And Dougie Corkish from Ramsey here, he was the AB, and I was the ordinary seaman.
Uh-huh.
And then the engineers was a fellow the name of Herbert Kane from Douglas was the chief engineer, like kind of style. And a fellow the name of Doran was the second engineer. There was no fireman there with them. They were doing their own. But then as things advanced kind of style, the first boat they got after that, we're talking we've been talking now about the old boats, about the Ben Veg and the Ben Varry, the Ben Sear. Well, the Ben Sear was a... The Ben Veg was the first new boat that they bought. They bought her from Larne in Northern Ireland. She was built in Larne in Northern Ireland. That was the first new boat they got.
Yeah.
Well, the second new boat they got then was this Ben Sear from Ellesmere Port.
Yes.
You see, she was built up in Ellesmere Port.
Yeah.
And then they had lots of ins and outs of second-hand boats. It would be too numerous automatically for the, for the tell.
I heard about the Ben Blanche.
The Sarah Blanche. Now, she used to belong to the Wigan Coal and Iron Company.
Did she?
Aye, and she would think it was very fast, you see.
Yeah.
Ben Blanche. This old John Cowley from Peel, he was the skipper in the Ben Blanche. Mm. Now, I remember him skippering the Ben Blanche, and my father was mate on the Ben Blanche with him when the 1926 coal strike was on, and they were all tied up outside of the Trafalgar Hotel there, that berth there, all the boats, four abreast they were out lying.
Really?
The whole of the company, the fleet was all tied up there.
Yeah. Yeah.
1926 coal strike. Yes. Going back a little bit now, aren't you?
Yes, indeed, my word.
And to crown it all is what the fellow said. You're sitting here now, I'm thinking to myself, you know, and I'm saying to myself, that fellow will think, it's bloody crazy or something. But, you know, I couldn't swim a stroke to save my life, you know that?
You couldn't swim?
I can't swim.
You can't?
No, and I've been in the water 100 times. But I can't swim.
And all those years at sea?
Yes, all those years at sea, and I couldn't swim. And I've saved dozens from bloody drowning.
Have you?
Yeah. Dozens from drowning, but I can't swim.
Good Lord.
Marvellous, isn't it?
Isn't it just?
True. Can't swim, a stroke to save me life.
And what was the worst passage you ever had?
Oh, now listen, when you're talking about passages, this is... The weather is not... It's something you talk about. You fella, you're going down the street, oh, bad day, isn't it? You see?
Yeah.
He gets down round the corner some other place, oh, the hell's a hell of a fine day, because he's got shelter from the wind.
Yes.
But listen, when you're out there, my friend,
yeah.
and the weather is bad,
yeah.
the weather is an education. Yeah. You've got to study the weather, you've got to watch the weather, you've got to take notice what Mother Nature put there, and those signs were put there for to be used and not abused.
Yes.
If the white man abuses the sign, you must be prepared to stand the consequences.
Yes,
now, I'll give you an inkling
of
the education that I was told about the weather.
Yeah.
I was in the Ben Vore in Ramsey, tied up outside of the Custom House berth in Ramsey, a beautiful day. I was master in the Ben Vore, discharging a cargo coal in Ramsey. We're going to sail now on the Friday night. We're going to go to Garston, upside of Liverpool. We're going to lock in on the flood. We're going to load the cargo on Saturday. We're going to lock out on the ebb, and we're bound to Douglas with it. Now, we're going to be back in Douglas on the Saturday night. And I said to my own father, if he was sitting there now, he said, where did you say you were going? Because he never left the sea, you see. Where did you say you were going? I said, we're going to Garston to load for Douglas, I said, and I'll see you on Sunday. Now, he come out to the gate with me. I had a shirt, sleeves rolled up to here, open neck like this, on the push bike. Sun was shining. Mountain up there was as clear as a bell. And then he turned round to me and he said to me, where did you say you were going? I said, we're going to Garston for Douglas. I'll see you on Sunday. I said, we're going to load on tide in the morning and I'll see you on Sunday. And then he said to me, I wouldn't like to disappoint you, he said, but I don't think you'll be going anywhere tonight. My God, I said, I'm sorry I come out to see you. I said, you're a bit of a joiner. I said, you've gone and spoilt my week. I said, I've done 3 cargoes across the channel. I said, this is my own time I'm going to waste now.
Yeah.
Oh, well, he said, we'll see. I jumped on the bike, see you on Sunday, I said, and I went from here as far as your car there.
Yeah.
And this voice is shouting to me. So I turned in the road and I come back. I put my foot on the curb and he said to me, I said, what's up with you now? He said to me, listen, he said, Phelan, he said, if you don't get away tonight, now this was the Friday evening, the tea time is like, you know, just before 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
He said, I can't see you sailing before next Wednesday evening.
Bye.
I nearly fell off the bike.
Aye.
Get away, I said, you're a Jonah. I said, you spoilt my week. I said, I'll see you on Sunday. Now, if I never moved from here alive, I didn't sail out of Ramsey till the following Wednesday evening.
You didn't?
There wasn't one tide that you could have honestly said you could have sailed a light ship, a light coaster across the channel in safety until the following Wednesday.
Just came up suddenly like that.
He could but read the he could read the signs.
Yes,
You see, this here can't be indoctrinated into. You've just got to be studying the signs, you see. They reckon, you see, that the signs is always in the sky there, you see.
Yes.
Now then, you'll see them out over here. We'll take the night that the Ben Seir was lost.
Mm.
We'll take the night that the JB Key was lost. Now, that's only two now. Now, wait a minute now.
Yeah.
Now, we'll take first the Ben Seir. Right. A weatherhead was in the sky. A weatherhead is cloud formation that forms like an Indian arrowhead like that.
Yes.
It's like the vapor plane, vapor trails of a plane. But it forms in the sky like that, to an arrowhead.
Yeah.
Now, that could be, say, northwest. Now, you'll see the other head. We'll cut it two heads, not a head and a tail.
Yeah.
That could be southeast, you see.
Yeah.
Now, a northwest and a southeast weatherhead seen in the sky in the winter never went unpunished. And 10 to 1, you'll get the wind down across the weatherhead. That is, if it's pointing northwest and southeast, you'll get the wind southwest.
Yeah.
Or northeast, you see.
Yeah.
It'll be across the weatherhead, it'll be.
Yeah.
The longer that it's seen in the sky, the more prolonged and the severer the weather will be. Right. Now, I've just explained the weatherhead to you now, you see, right.
Yeah.
When the JB Key was lost, I was now master of the Ben Rhyn, a light ship coaster. She was only drawn 5 foot forward and 9 foot aft, light ship, and she only carried about 100 ton of water ballast in the double bottom, but very, very buoyant, you see.
Yeah.
If the swell, the fella said, was as high as you'd be, they were started to throw themselves about and lift their stones up out of the water and what have you.
Yeah.
Right on. Now, the JB Key was in Ramsey loading gravel for Liverpool.
Yeah.
And he was loading out over and at the up by the swimming pool on the Moor promenade over that side of the quay over there.
Yeah.
Right up. Now, I'm up in Douglas discharging the cargo, a coal, and I'm going to Garston with orders to say, we're going to Garston to load for the Northern Ireland Coal Pool. Now, you see, during the war years and that, you see, the Northern Ireland Coal Commission, they automatically said where they took your boat, but they could automatically send you wherever they wanted from Londonderry to we say, up to Carlingford Lock, up to Warren Point.
Yeah.
Any place at all in Northern Ireland. Mm-hmm. You went and loaded, they told you where you went with the coal, right? Now, I come out of the house that morning, beautiful morning, the sun was out shining like a bell. I could have put my hand out and touched the Isle of Wight Horn like that from Cronkelvin.
Yeah.
I could see right out over the town.
Yeah.
And up in the sky here now, the weatherhead, northwest and southeast, you see. Now it's been indoctrinated into me, you see, look out.
Yeah.
Don't ignore it, you see, but watch yourself. Right. I went down to the office and Mr. Swales was in the office first thing. Well, oh, Captain, you're going to Garston to load for the Northern Coal Pool. You'll be finished tonight to sail tonight. Mr. Swales said that I wouldn't like to disillusion you, I said, but something seems to tell me that we won't be going in anywhere tonight. Good God, John, he said, I got the forecast this morning. He said, the Irish Sea, he said, 4 to 5 south of southwest. Mr. Swales, I'm not worrying about the forecast, but he said. I just said, oh, you're only worrying about nothing, he said to me. Go ahead. Right, well, I went out. But you had to come down in the afternoon to verify the orders to see that everything was all right, you see. So anyway, I come down. And he says to me, well, they are, John. He said, you won't know enough. And he said, got the forecast again this afternoon. He said, south of southwest, 4 to 5. I said, Mr. Van, I put him, what, you got the forecast? I said, I still said, I don't think it'd be good. Oh, go on, you're worrying about nothing. Right, off I goes. I got me tea, went down out, I got the bus. You know what, you could have struck matches all night down at the bus station and that one of them would have blown out.
Yeah.
I got on the bus. There was all sort of things going through my mind, you see, because my father was indoctrinated into me, you see, kind of that, hey, don't ignore it, you see.
Yeah.
And he said, J.B. Keane, our little coaster carrier, because he's going to be loaded with gravel. He's going to be loaded. I'm going to be light ship in the big motor boat, supposed to be, you see.
Yeah.
So anyhow, I went up anyhow on the bus, and I got off the bus. And where I got off the bus at the bus station, I happened to look out. They didn't have the bus station like it was now. It was all open. And sure, here was the carry coming in from the moon now, from the southeast, oak, racing over a bit of the moon was in, you see. Coming racing in, oh, good enough, I thought. So I went aboard the boat, put the bag aboard the boat, met Stanley Lindsay, the engineer. What time you be pushing off, Father? Just you hang on a minute, I said. I'll tell you when you go. Just don't get excited. Went up in the wheelhouse, just touched the glass like that, just a tip. That's good enough. Went down the harbour office. Captain Cajean was the harbour master at the time, and he said to me, what time do you think you'll be making a move, John? I said, Captain, I don't think I'll be going anywhere tonight. And he swung round in the swivel chair and he said to me, why, what's the matter, John? He said, don't. I only come up from the bottom piece just now there. He said, it's nothing. Round down there, I don't care where you come from, Captain. I said, I just said to you, I don't think I'll be going any. Now listen here, he said, if you're anywhere worried at all, I'll tell you what I'll do. He said, I'll get on to the Met forecast and present and see what he's got for you, you see.
Mm.
Now that J.B. Key is on passage now because he's loaded, you see, he's gone. He gets on passage and he turns round to me and he says, oh my word, oh dear, he said to me. Here, John, have a listen to this, he said. So anyhow, he gave me the phone. Good evening, friend, what's the glad tidings of great joy tonight? He said, well, skip away, you're bound to. I told him we're bound to Garson and in the Mersey. You'll not be going anywhere tonight on this forecast, Captain. He said, he's giving it now. He said, 65 to 75 with gusts up to 85 miles an hour. Imminent, that's right away. That's the weatherhead, you see. The J.B. Key is gone. Now listen, if I never walked out of here alive, I did no more now. I says to Tom Cajean, that's the reason why I'm not going tonight, Captain. And he said to me, how did you know that?
Aye.
You see, I went up. Now, you're not supposed to do this, but I just got on the RT and I called the J.B. Key. We had them little portable pies in them at the time. Called the J.B. Gordon Quayle, the mate, was on watch. Where's the captain? Oh, he's having to lie down. I said, listen, you tell the skipper, I said, there's a very bad forecast in, 65 to 75, with gusts up to 85 southeast. And I said, tell him that I'm not going anywhere tonight, so he won't have to worry about me.
Mm.
Right. Come on. Everything was done. Well, told the boys, get some more ropes on it, get the fenders up. Now the tide was starting to. I did no more. I ran across the quay, I jumped on the bus, and I went home. I got home, I couldn't sleep thinking about that man.
Aye.
The bloody windows up the Crown Galvin, they were rattling like this, and they were iron catches on them,
and
they were rattling with the force of the wind. Finally, in the early hours of the morning, I must have fell asleep, and I got up in the morning, and I got on the phone to Swales, you see, to tell him that I was still in Douglas. He was only in the house then. Oh my God, John, where are you? Where do you think I am, Mr. Swales? I said, I told you, I said, I didn't think I'd be going anywhere. Oh, my God, aren't I glad to hear that? That's what he's saying now, you see. He wasn't saying that the day before, but anyhow, he's dead and gone. Now he might be listening to me, but it's the truth.
Yeah.
So anyhow, he says, the J.B. Key is in all sorts of trouble. He shipped his cargo in the Irish Sea, and thank God. All the ships are standing by him, and at the finish, he capsized. The New Brighton Lightboat had to take them out of it, you see.
Yeah.
Well, you see, it just goes to show you.
Yes.
But you see, there was another night there, when the old new leader, that was the old scooter that the saltworks used to have running the salt.
Yeah.
Up to the Highlands, up to Stornoway and all them places up there, like the Isle of Harris and and the Kilsallagh Gaels and Campbelltown and Dublin. They used to go all over with the salt. They used to bring a lot of salt into air for the creameries for making butter and stuff like that, you know. But anyhow, we were this night moored in the Manxona outside of the second berth upside the Ramsey Swing Bridge. Now that we were waiting for the to go across to the salt works and the daylight tide, you see, and we're going to load out for the salt works. Now it come on a very bad night that night. I would think myself that was one of the worst. I've seen a few, but that was one of the worst nights that I've seen in Ramsey for many a long year, I would say to myself, because it come on to blow. And there must have been such force in the depression that was behind this storm that the Manx owner was lying two berths upside the swing bridge. She was drawing 11 foot 6 draft, and she was afloat at 2 hours flood.
2 hours?
The tide come in that quick that the new leader, who had been lying sunk for donkey's years over in the salt works with holes in her to allow the water to run in, and she never floated. The tide come in that quick by Mother Nature that night that it floated the new leader before she had time to sink. And the force of the wind blew her cables and the chains out of the ground and blew her down in the hole where the Manxona used to lie. And I reckon myself the salt work chimneys was going like that night.
Yes, yeah.
But the spindrift was coming down Ramsey Harbour. That's the Gawangs, as they call them. Spindrift was coming down and it was lifting, I suppose, about 50 or 60 feet in the air. You had to have your oilskins, sea boots, a lot on you, walking on the quay for the spindrift that was coming down.
Yes,
yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, nobody knows the power of the sea, my friend. Yeah. You're talking about out there, it's a lonely old spot out there. I've seen some queer dudes myself. I came one time in the Ben Valley, the motorboat from Neath in the Bristol Channel, and we were loaded with basic slag. Well, there'll only be about so many rows in the bottom of a kind of style, you know, because it's very, very heavy stuff, you know.
Yeah.
You see, and of course it makes them like a dog.
Yeah.
They'll dance about. Well, we started off, it was 5 to 6 when we set off. Not so bad. Oh, we got away on the way. It'd gone up to 6 to 7, you see. Then we got up to the Bishops. That's the Bishops as you come out of the Bristol Channel now to run right down from the Bishops Lighthouse, right down for the Isle of Man. You can run in a straight line right down, you see, right out off Carmarthen Bay and out off Carnarvon and way down outside of Holyhead and right down to for Langness, practically, you see.
Yeah.
And next salute has gone up to 7 to 8 and then it's gone up to 8 to 9. And now it's gone up to 9 to 10. And it's gone up now to 10 to 12.
Good.
Now listen, friend. Don't ever wish to see the sea at force 12, my friend.
No.
Don't you ever wish to see it.
No.
It might be all right standing looking at it, but don't you ever wish to be in it with the sea at force 12. Because, by God, hell hath no fury like Mother Nature.
It must be frightening. Yeah.
Frightening?
Yeah.
God almighty.
Yeah.
And it's what the fella said. You had to be brave to do it. You couldn't have done it without it.
No.
I mean to say, you see, I neither drink nor smoke.
No.
You see, so I never had no solitude by going and hiding myself in the bottle.
No.
I just went at me merry way about and tried to do my job to the best of my ability. That's all I could do.
Yeah.
I don't think of myself that I automatically, I hope I'm hurt no fellow along the road, but you run into all sorts of quagmires and what have you and so
forth. Well, would you have to heave to under conditions like that?
Well, you see, it could be, if you were loaded, it wouldn't be so bad kind of style, you see, but you couldn't go to drive a light vessel into it because you'd put a bottom up, you'd smash a bottom up, up through you, because if they come up there and they lift up, when they come down and hit the water, it's just like hitting concrete.
Yes.
You see what I mean?
Yeah.
And of course, an ordinary iron ship, you'd loosen the rivets in the many boats that's riveted, you see, more or less, you see.
Yeah.
Of course, all the new boats, they were all welded jobs, you see. All the seams were welded, you could crack the seams in them, of course. With them putting the double bottom tanks in them kind of style, it made it better. Now, the likes of that Ben Veen, the last Ben Veen that they had.
Yeah.
Now, that was a good boat.
Was it?
I was skipping in that boat for 9 years. Never once was she stopped, light ship not loaded.
Really?
And she seen it in all glory.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
She seen the lot. Yeah. If ever I had an attachment for a boat, the Ben Vane was a good boat.
Was it?
You got to talk good about the good ones.
What was the worst you were ever in?
Well, the whole lot of them was not the Ben Begg, I would have said, was about the bloody word.
The Ben Begg.
Oh, God. Surely a glorified prankman, you see.
Yes,
You see?
Yes.
You had a lifeline running up along the hatch, you see, for to hang on to the lifeline when you were running forward. A big wire stretched, a wire rope stretched.
Yeah.
And you might have locked your hands like that and run up so if a lump of sea was to hit you. Over the side.
And that was just going over the side, forecastle.
Eh?
That was just going far into the forecastle.
That's all you had to go, you see. Yeah. There was only a little bit of a raised poop on the after deck, that was all, you see. God almighty.
Yeah. And they expected you to go out in all weathers in those.
Well, listen, here's what the fellow said, the master was master of the boat, but they expect you to do a hell of a lot, I mean to say, you know, but it's what the fella said, is when you got to send many a time a donkey to do a horse's work.
Yes.
But that trading, as far as I'm talking about, the ways of Ireland and that there, I mean, see, the trade to the ways of Ireland in the wintertime, it was severe.
Yes, yeah.
Because you see, you're out in the depression area, you see.
Yeah.
You see, Malham, that's the depression area. You see, the depression's come right up through and the Bay of Biscay right up across the mouth of the channel and carry straight on, and they're going, you're up in there.
I've heard
the lighthouse keepers on Blackrock telling me that the trucks of the sea that would come in many a time on the west of Ireland, that any rocks below the water 108 feet would break.
Really?
Just imagine the trucks of the sea that was coming in.
God.
Well, listen, when the sea was hitting Black Rock and the spray was going over the top of 295 feet out of the water.
Yeah.
And then Eagle Island itself. Eagle Island was a lighthouse that was bluffed to the sea and it ran away down towards the mainland. Now, the lighthouse just popped over a concrete reinforced wall, 12 foot thick. It was in front of the lighthouse to shield it from the sea. Only the lantern popped over like that. The lighthouse was protected by the wall. But it wasn't good enough. The sea come in one time and shifted the wall, and the lighthouse keepers, as the sea went into the dwellings, the sea went in the front way, the lighthouse keepers went out the back.
Get away.
With the sea.
Severe.
By God, the way survived.
It's a raw spot.
Bad place, all right.
Well, they've taken all the people off the Blaskets now, haven't they?
I don't presume. Out on Tory, there was about 300 and odd of them out on Tory too, but do you reckon, you see, they were that close bred, if they cut their finger, they would bleed, you see?
Yes, they
were that close bred. But then they always wanted to get to the mainland kind of style, you see, because the stable died out there, you see, many a time you wouldn't get it that. The mail boat, and their mail boat was only a kind of a big open motor boat, built strong, like a big strong built boat, because she had to be strong for to get across to the mainland, you see.
Yeah, yeah.
And she would be bringing all sorts, flour and you name it. I brought the eggs home there for my mother from the west of Ireland for threepence a dozen.
Really?
Yes.
Threepence a dozen.
Threepence a dozen. I once loaded the cargo of potatoes in a place called in Carlingford Lock, in just down below Warren Point. Anyhow, it doesn't make any difference. We went in and we loaded this cargo of spuds now for the Channel Islands. No, I'm telling a lie. We loaded it for down the south coast of England there. Do you know what the hell the name of the place? But anyhow, we loaded this cargo spuds up, and was getting coming on now Christmas week. So the fellow who was shipping the spuds, he said, "Here, take this down and give it to the merchant when you get down there. A tree of holly, loaded with berries.
Yeah.
Put it in the hall for nothing. The tree, trunk and all. Here, throw it in the hack." We were loading them potatoes there. Ross Trevor it was. Place called Ross Trevor. 1 and 6 pence a hundredweight, including the bag.
1 and 6.
Yes, and we've got them down to penchance, and we discharge them on the quay in penchance at 6 and 6 pence.
Get away.
Yeah. 1 and 6 a hundredweight.
6 a hundredweight.
Yeah.
It's incredible, isn't it?
Well, it just goes to show you.
Yeah.
We could automatically when you got your wages, you kind of style. You see, you had to automatically now allocate your money out for the duty, because you didn't know where you were going to go though.
No.
When you got the orders,
yeah.
God, you could have been going to gas and to load for out any place around the west of Ireland,
yeah.
Any place or the south west of Ireland.
Yeah.
You see, Valencia Island or any place round about there.
Yeah.
Cassavine, Valencia, you name the places, up the Shannon, anywhere at all. You name it, or out to Killybegs or Donegal or all them Ballyshannon and them places there, you know.
And did the Keys boats actually go to the Channel Islands and trade to the Channel Islands?
No, you'd only be chartered for the cargo, you see.
Oh.
You know, we had a cargo of fertilizers down one time from Birkenhead. We loaded this cargo of fertilizers, and part of it had to be discharged in Guernsey, and part of it had to be discharged in Jersey.
Mm.
And then when we loaded the fertilizer in Birkenhead, we had it shipped over to Liverpool to the Collingwood dock, and we had to take 200 barrels of treacle.
Treacle?
Treacle. Aye, ordinary, in barrels of treacle.
Yeah.
So anyhow, we done that, and when absolute we started off, we had to fill the bunkers up. We were down the side pockets, packing it in with your hand, because it's a long run now,
yeah.
You see, from Birkenhead, and
yeah.
to come back.
Yeah.
And then we went and built up hatches and what have you, so we could tip another wagon over and above what we had in the saddleback, right up to the back rail of the bridge, it was all coal.
Really?
We
yeah.
set off sail then, and we went down as far as from Liverpool, when we come out of Liverpool, out of the Collingwood dock, we got down as far as the Holyhead to the Skerry's Lighthouse, where
yeah.
you turn around the corner, you see, to go over towards Holyhead. And a come on dense fog, thick as a bag. We never saw nothing, not a thing. We went right down the channel, English Channel. We went down round the long ships. We went across the. We heard all sorts of horns, and we were hearing these French fishing boats blowing a big horn like a seashell and all like that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So finally at the finish, when we got across towards the Channel Islands, we come across a big East Coast collier with three hatches on it. Oh, a big, massive, big thing. Like one hatch there and two hatches here, you see, you know. So we went up alongside him, you see, and asked him to see how he... No, he said, I haven't seen nothing, he said, for 3 days. He'd been to an anchor for 3 days. Well, you see, he couldn't do nothing because the Channel Islands was nothing, only solid rocks.
Right, yeah,
you see?
Yeah.
So anyhow, my father says to the mate, he said, only one thing we can do is go beside him and let go and wait to see will it clear. We just went in the throes of getting the anchor, and all of a sudden, the next loop, I shouted to the other man, what's that lad over there? He just thought a big hand had lifted under the fog like that and lifted it up, and he's like Corbriere Lighthouse outside of St. Helier, sitting there, and the mail boat, the cross channel boat, they're sitting on the bloody rocks, he was. She got right up on the rocks underneath the lighthouse. So anyhow, we did no more now. We went away in, and we tied up, jumped ashore and tied the ropes on, you see. When we got in, there was a bit of a mail boat astern of us, you see. So I happened to be just walking around about the deck. We hadn't seen anybody, no half the master, no nothing at all. Tie yourself up. So this fella come up and he said, is the chief officer aboard, you see? Oh, yes, sir. He says, well, tell him I'd like to speak to him, would you see? So anyway, I went down and I shouted, Lewis, come on. Hey, Lewis, come on up. You wanted up here. What's that? Who's that? Never mind. Come up and have a look. He went up and he seen this. He fell in the course. He thought there was somebody with the gold rings on him, you see? He said, hey mate, he said, the best thing for you to do, he said, is pull another couple of lengths yourself further ahead in your berth. Pull her ahead another couple of lengths, he said, will you? Right, oh, we'll do that. So we did that. Bloody good job we did. Because if we would have stayed where we were and that fellow wouldn't have said nothing, we would have been sitting on the bloody step. Because you see, where the mail boat was, he was afloat, you see.
Yes.
Where we were, when we come in, the bloody tide had covered that bloody all over. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
So we finally, anyhow, we discharged the cargo there, and a bucket of tomatoes for a shilling.
Really?
You could buy. A pint of 4.7 cent in a cut glass bottle. A pint, 8 and 6 pence. So we discharged in there then, and we went over then to St. Petersport then and put the balance ashore there. We set sail from there then, and we went back then to Cardiff to see if there anything to be picked up in Cardiff, kind of style, a railway call or something. No, nothing. So they did no more but put a couple of wagons of bunkers in, you see, just for a matter of harbour dues, and turned round about, set sail, and we went away down to Maryport in Cumberland, lightship. Look at the bloody trail that was from Liverpool all the way down to the Channel Islands.
And then all the way back up.
All the way bloody back to Cardiff, nothing there, and then trade all the way back then to bloody Maryport. Yes.
And there was a lot of lightship travel, was there?
Oh, yes. You were blessed in a way if you got they were laughing, they were as happy as a sandboy if they got a double wrapper, as you called it, each way.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. Mind you, when you were going to the Bristol Channel, you had Old Town. There was 9 times out of 10 you might get a cargo railway call or something back.
Yeah.
Or many a time if you're going down to the Bristol Channel, say with stones from the quarries and the Welsh quarries there, we carried a lot of stones too.
Yeah.
Shipping cargo back.